How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, here on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, the list goes on and on. Wrestling Observer Weekend, Saturday mornings, we are here as well at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 Eastern, and beginning next Monday, we will be here Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. So that's drive time over there on the East Coast. And there will be a replay at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. So no matter where you are in the country, you will be able to listen to this show on your drive home. And obviously, so much pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news to talk about every single day. And today is no exception. Last night was the UFC show, the Brandon Thatch versus Benson Henderson main event, which in some ways harken back to the early days of UFC. Benson Henderson looked quite a bit smaller than Brandon Thatch in that fight, but I wouldn't say it was anything resembling some of the all-time great size mismatches we have seen in the sport. But Brandon Thatch was clearly bigger, he was clearly stronger, he threw Benson Henderson around for 3 rounds, until finally in the 4th round, straight out of actually those early days of UFC, the smaller man outlasted the bigger man, put him in a rear naked choke, and tapped him out in 3:58 of the 4th round. We can talk the main fights on last night's UFC show, as well as all of the other news in mixed martial arts. Ronda Rousey getting ready to fight Kat Zingano. There's a lot of stuff going on there. And obviously pro wrestling as well. The WWE had their earnings call last week. We can talk about how WWE business is doing leading into 2015. The WWE Network numbers. Obviously, the NXT special we've already talked about, but we can do more thoughts on that. New Japan ran this weekend as well. We'll get the New Japan update from Mike Sempervivi. And pretty much anything else that is going on in this business. So that's coming up after we get out of this first break here. So stand by, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news to talk about here today. This is my last show from Hawaii before I head home. Sempervivi is over there on the East Coast, which is being battered by terrible weather. Apparently, we've got about 100 million people who are about to be struck by horrible cold temperatures. And, Mike, how is the weather out there?
You know, it could be worse where I'm at. I'm not going to complain. We are just getting a ridiculous amount of gusty high winds. But it is better than being anywhere between Long Island and Nova Scotia right now, where they are about to get the blizzard of all blizzards again this year. The blizzard to end all blizzards, getting another one, and it's going to be bad up there. And apparently there's a bunch of bad weather that's pushing across the Midwest as well. So just bad times in the Midwest and the Northeast when it comes to weather. And you should be enjoying these last days in Maui because, it's not the Northeast.
Well, it is Maui, but we didn't get any cold yesterday. But we got hit by the storm from hell. It was crazy. The winds, the rain. It was not a beautiful day in Maui yesterday. And in fact, we went to this whale watching symposium. And as we were leaving, I opened up the front door to head out. And I literally was nearly killed by this giant display. They had a giant display outside. And the moment I opened the door, this giant gust of wind knocked this display, like, it knocked it off of the roof and in front of the door, and it smashed into the door. I can't even tell you the size of this thing and the damage it would have done, but luckily the door was in the way, and they immediately had about 6 people come out to try to right this thing again, and it was quite the day. It looked like there were just palm trees, the palms were everywhere, and it was quite the wild day, but terrible weather all over.
I thought you were going to tell me it was terrifying because behind that display, BJ Penn jumped out and beat you up.
I was afraid there was a giant, I think I was afraid Moby Dick was behind it and was about to jump out and swallow me whole. It was a terrible moment. But anyway, we got some mixed martial arts and pro wrestling news to talk about here today. I saw the main event of last night's UFC show, which of course was Brandon Thatch facing Benson Henderson. Henderson moving up to 170 pounds. It appeared that Brandon Thatch was moving up to 205. Very, very large size difference, it appeared. More so with the weigh-ins and actually in the cage. In the cage, Thatch was just a lot taller. But he was obviously bigger and stronger. He threw him around, just ragdolled him for the first couple of rounds. But then he, I guess, I don't know if he got tired or if Henderson just persevered, but Henderson ended up getting that rear naked choke in the fourth round, and quite the showing from Ben Henderson. Now I guess we see where they go with him.
Yeah, and they were already kind of teasing what would happen to him, or people were trying to tease what could happen to him, and it was a very impressive performance. I picked Ben Henderson before the show, but then I went back and watched Thatch's last fight, and I saw the weigh-in, and I was thinking, no way. You know, I figured Henderson might be able to get him in deep waters late in the fight and really be able to test Thatch's, one, his skill level, but also obviously his stamina, because most of his fights have been one-round affairs. In fact, most of them have been one-round affairs. The only other fight he had outside of this that had gone out of the first round went three rounds, and he lost the split decision. But after seeing the weigh-ins, I'm thinking maybe Henderson's not even going to be able to get to him. And in the first couple of rounds, I thought that to be the case. Now, I did give the first round to Henderson, but he was very active. He was moving side to side. He was landing on Thatch's body, but he really wasn't getting after his face at all, and it didn't look like he'd be able to because of just the massive size difference between the two. And Thatch looked as though he was going to be able to land some hard shots when he needed to and be able to cut Henderson down. But he just got slower as the fight went on, and in the third round, Henderson really turned it on, and that was it. Not long after, Thatch was choked out via a rear naked choke, and it shows the inexperience level, too, because he gave up his back about three times in those last two rounds to Henderson, and finally Henderson was able to take him down and defeat him, and this was just a case of a much more well-skilled, smaller guy defeating the bigger guy, and it probably isn't the best indication in the world of what Benson Henderson can do at 170 pounds, but it's still a feather in his cap, a very impressive performance, and it leads to people asking about what about him and Rory McDonald, which he had mentioned after the fight, although Henderson looks like he's not going to get McDonald right away because they may be setting up him and Robbie Lawler or McDonald in the title shot.
The original main event for this show was actually going to be Matt Brown versus Tarek Saffiedean, and Saffiedean ended up having to pull out of the fight. They moved Matt Brown to UFC 185. Yes, Matt Brown is going to be facing Johnny Hendricks at UFC 185. I don't know why I find that to be such a weird fight. I guess visually, when I don't see them next to each other, Hendricks just seems like he's so much bigger than Matt Brown, but apparently not. Matt Brown, Johnny Hendricks, what are your thoughts on that particular fight?
Actually, that's a really fun fight. I mean, as far as the guy slugging it out, and it's also one of the reasons that it figures that Benson Henderson is out of that mix at 170, because in all likelihood, if Rory McDonald's going to have another fight, it would be against Robbie Lawler. So then you're again, when it comes to Benson, it's, well, what does he do there? Although I guess you can give him another welterweight, even though you know, he's still in line, although he's lost twice. I mean, he still could get a title fight at lightweight and continue to go after that belt. But if he wanted to continue to fight at 170, it would give him a better chance to have somebody that he can kind of negotiate with and see if this is, you know, what direction he wants to go in before he hits that top tier guys at 170. But I've always been a big Johnny Hendricks fan, and I would take him over Matt Brown in there. But as far as, you know, the quality of the fight, it's going to be two guys who are going to end up slugging, so we're all winners there.
Now, I didn't see the entire show, but I was told that there were three fights that you should probably see. And for those that may have this show on their DVR, what were the three best fights on the fight night last night?
Yeah, the whole thing wasn't very good. I mean, really, the main event is what you want to see. You know, it goes four rounds, and again, it's just, as you can see the fight go on, you see Henderson slowly breaking Thatch down and changing levels and just being a better, more intelligent, more experienced fighter. But that was definitely one you need to see. Max Holloway put on a pretty damn good performance in the semi-main event against Cole Miller. He did a really good job there, although it went to a three-round decision. That was impressive. Neil Magny wiping out Kunimoto was also one you should probably see. Went three rounds, ended with a Magny rear naked choke victory there. Outside of that, that's pretty much about it. Ray Borg fought in a flyweight fight, and he looked very impressive, but that also went to a three-round decision. And there really wasn't much on the very early undercard. Chaz Skelly and Jim Ehlers got into had a little bit of a controversial fight in that Skelly landed an illegal knee at the end of the second round that put Ehlers out. And Skelly ended up winning the fight by TKO with 1 second left in the round. But it really isn't something you should go out of your way to see. And to be honest, even with the stuff that I just named, if you just watch the main event and just kind of ignore the rest of the card, you really, really aren't going to be missing that much.
Well, the next show is next week, everybody. There is a UFC from Brazil, and the main event of the show, what a slobber knocker, the return of Frank Mir as he faces Antonio Bigfoot Silva. That is the main event of next Saturday's UFC Fight Night. Edson Barboza.
Thinking about a show where dudes are going to get knocked out.
Yeah, Edson Barboza and Michael Johnson there in the semi-main. So if you want to check that out, that is going to be next week. UFC Antonio Bigfoot Silva against Frank Mir. And this will be Frank Mir's, seems like he hasn't fought forever. This will be Frank Mir's first fight since, looks like the Alistair Overeem fight 1 year ago, actually. So this will be his first fight in a year.
February.
That's right, February 1st of last year. All right, everybody, we are going to head to a break. When we get back, we'll talk more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of news to get into here today. In the first segment, we talked about last night's UFC event, and we ran down all of the most important matches for you to watch on that show. Talked about the show coming up the next week as well, this Bigfoot Silva versus Frank Mir fight. And then that will lead us to UFC 184, which is 2 weeks from now. Ronda Rousey returning to action, facing Kat Zingano, in a fight that Dana White has joked, if Ronda Rousey wins, she's going to have to be put in the men's division. And again, he is calling this the toughest fight of Ronda Rousey's career, actually, the fight with Kat Zingano. I think I've heard him say that about three different Ronda Rousey fights in the past couple of years, and she usually just walks through everybody. What are your predictions for this fight here, Mike?
She's going to walk through her. It's nothing against Kat Zingano. It's just, you know, who's going to stop Ronda Rousey? And again, it's going to have to be somebody who's got incredible balance. They have incredible hand speed with incredible punching power. They need to be the whole package. And no offense to Kat Zingano, but Ronda Rousey is far more of the whole package than she is. And I don't bet against Ronda Rousey. It's like Anderson Silva or lots of other people, John Jones. Until I actually see it for myself and I see somebody take her apart or I see somebody beat her, I'm not going to believe it. So it's a easy pick to take Ronda Rousey on that show. It's interesting, Dave and I were talking about it a little bit last night after this show, where if Ronda Rousey were to get hurt, you would have to actually cancel this show since it really is a one-person show. I know it's insulting to Kat Zingano to call it a one-person show, so we'll call it a one-fight show. But if something were to happen to her, you'd have to cancel the show, which is taking place at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. So if you really like Ronda Rousey, that's probably the only way you're going to get this card, because outside of that fight, there's almost nothing on it that is worth kind of an average fan going out of their way to see.
I don't know if canceling the show is necessary. I mean, you could, if you really wanted to, move Jake Ellenberger and Josh Koscheck up. It's not like that's a great fight or anything like that, but I mean, you're gonna have a six figure pay per view buy one way. I don't imagine it going below 100,000 buys. Maybe slightly below, but I don't know. The point of this is a rare UFC event that not only is headlined by a women's fight, but the top two matches are women's fights. Ronda Rousey and Kat Zingano is the main event, and Raquel Pennington and Holly Holm is the semi-main. And, of course, Holly Holm, the boxer, this will be her first ever UFC fight. And as much as Dana is talking about Kat Zingano, which obviously he has to do, it's very clear from the way they put this card together that the idea is if Holly Holm just goes and destroys Raquel Pennington, then I would guess the next fight for Ronda Rousey is Rousey versus Holly Holm. And as our resident boxing expert here on this show, Mike, tell everybody a little bit about Holly Holm.
She was, there have not been many great women's boxers in the history of women's boxing. You know, most people know the Christy Martins and Leila Ali's and people like that. But Holly Holm, did a really, really good job in her boxing career, and the people around her did a very good job with her as well. She's from Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is obviously the home of Greg Jackson, and but before it was kind of known for that in fighting circles, or at least around the same time, they were doing a great job, and everybody involved with Holly Holm was doing a great job kind of building her boxing career up. They even had independent boxing pay-per-views featuring the quote-unquote preacher's daughter facing off, and these weren't big money pay-per-views or anything like that, but they were able to get them on in demand and do a lot of work as far as selling this girl and selling her in a sport where there were very few other stars. And she took a turn to mixed martial arts during her career, and was I'm trying to think of who her husband is, but I know she's married to somebody who I believe he's got something to do with Jackson Winklejohn. I'm not sure exactly who it is right now, but she started getting into mixed martial arts and has been slowly built up. And she's had started off at a low level and got into Bellator and went into Legacy. And then ultimately she was signed by the UFC, and she's got, she has appeal. There is a marketability around her. She's not anywhere near as marketable as Ronda Rousey, but she does have the boxing skill that I think is needed to defeat Ronda Rousey. It's just once you get past her hands, which are absolutely fantastic, and she's a good kickboxer as well, once you get past that, does she have enough to grapple with Ronda Rousey? And the answer to that is a resounding no. So will she ever truly be ready? It's doubtful, but her handlers right now don't want her anywhere near Ronda because she's just not ready yet.
Well, she better get ready quick because it may be next. I never know how good somebody is in terms of their boxing career because God knows how they arrange boxing fights and such. But she was...
And it's not like she was fighting massively deep divisions and things like that. I mean, it's just boxing. Women's boxing has got the same problem that women's MMA does in most of the divisions, which is they're just unfortunately not deep.
Yeah, she had a 33-2-3 record in boxing, undefeated in MMA, against six people with no Wikipedia entry, which usually means not the highest level of competition. Although Jan Finney, she did beat her in her second fight via TKO. All knockouts, TKOs, there's a decision here. I mean, obviously she would have to have some decent submission defense, but we'll see what happens. That is the Ronda Rousey fights coming up in 2 weeks, and it takes place from the Staples Center in L.A. February 28th, if you want to check out that one there. And then I guess we'll see what's next for Ronda Rousey. Maybe the men's division. Mike, if you had to put Ronda Rousey in the men's division, who would you have be your first opponent?
The weakest dude I could find just so she completely wrecks him. I mean, she could actually wreck some bigger dudes anyway, but I would just find somebody she can actually beat the tar out of, and she can just beat up badly which would set up her second fight against somebody a little bit tougher. I wouldn't rush her right into a fight with Jose Aldo. But, you know, I would build up to a little bit and just have her just
Aldo
around.
Aldo's 145.
Well, hey. Well, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Her and Demetrius Johnson. You know what? If you just want to just get right to it.
He's too small for her.
Make that a pay-per-view main event because she can outdraw Johnson. And I guess we'll find out if she can truly do that by herself this weekend.
Hold on. Now I'm looking.
Next weekend.
Now I'm going to look at the UFC bantamweight division here if I can find a list of current UFC bantamweight fighters. Let's see. What about an Eddie Wineland?
Let's see.
Chris Cariasso, maybe he'd be a good one.
Actually, Chris Cariasso would take over Eddie Wineland. That would actually be fun.
Actually, you know the fight I really want to see is Ronda against, what's his name?
Brian Caraway.
The money I would pay for that fight. I think she'd beat Caraway.
Oh, by the way, Holly Holm, Joey Villasenor, who I was not sure if she's still with him or not, but that's who I was thinking of.
That's right. What was his name again? You just said it. Brian Caraway. Let me see what it is. I know he's heavier. That's unfortunate. Maybe he could drop to
it
weight.
It doesn't matter what weight Caraway is at. We just would want to see it anyway. I mean, Ronda wouldn't care what weight it is.
No, he fights at 135. Look at that.
Perfect.
Let's see how many people have submitted him. If he's been submitted at all, he has. Mark Hominick submitted him. To me, that means for sure Ronda Rousey could beat this guy. And John Gunderson submitted him, although that was way back in 2006, so I would presume that Brian Caraway has improved since 2006. I cannot confirm that, but I would be interested in seeing that battle if she ever did move into the men's division. Which, by the way, everybody, Ronda Rousey is never moving to the men's division. Crying out loud, I can't even see tag team matches in UFC, much less Ronda Rousey taking on the men. By the way, without looking, Mike, what is Brian Caraway's nickname?
What is his nickname?
That's right. He's got a nickname.
No clue.
Kid Lightning.
It's a terrible nickname.
What are you talking about? Kid Lightning, Brian Caraway. All right, enough mixed martial arts.
Just because he just retired not long ago, let me ask you this. If Tim Sylvia was looking like Tim Sylvia would tend to look towards the late end, you know, part of his career, and you put him in there against Ronda Rousey, how fast do you think Ronda Rousey could submit Tim Sylvia?
See, I think that Tim Sylvia is a very sensitive man, and I think that if you put him in the cage with Ronda Rousey, he would be gun-shy, and I think that she would very, very quickly take him down and submit him. That is my prediction.
Dude, we talk about these prize show matchups, and it's like, oh my God, you'll never see Ronda Rousey fight a man. She can beat a lot of these men. I'm not endorsing this, but I'm just saying she can beat a lot of these men.
All right, so soon we're going to head to a break, but we'll do a preview of the next segment. There's a lot of pro wrestling news to talk about here. Obviously, the Fastlane show is coming up. Tomorrow is Raw, but mostly we got to talk about this WWE Network number. They're over 1 million subscribers right now, and my guess is that as they head into a free February, halfway through free February right now, I would think that the idea that they are going to drop below 1 million anytime soon is exceedingly unlikely. And I would also expect that by the time Mania rolls around, they will probably be at about 1.25 million subscribers. And while they are not where they were before they decided to kill their pay-per-view business and create a network, they are making a lot more money than they were expecting to make when they first did projections for this year. They're down to losing very, very little, just over $1 million, in fact, and they'd expected somewhere around 10. So we can talk about that when we come back from the break and so much more on Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wrestling Observer weekends every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 Eastern. Sundays at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. And beginning next Monday, February 23rd, Monday through Friday, we will be here Noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, drive time on the East Coast. 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern replay, drive time on the West Coast as well. No matter where you are, you will be able to listen to this show on your way home on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, the Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, which to me is your best option if you're in the car. Just grab TuneIn Radio and search Sports Byline USA. You can listen to Sports Byline anytime on the TuneIn Radio app. And, of course, our show is streaming there all the time. So check that out on Sports Byline USA on TuneIn Radio. And, of course, for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, not to mention members-only download of every show that we have ever done, both new shows and the entire archive dating back to 2005, over 6,000 hours of audio and growing every single week. All of these shows available for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. If you ever miss a show, if the show doesn't fit into your schedule, or you want access to all of the shows we do every day that are only available for subscribers, including Wrestling Observer Radio with myself and Dave Meltzer, Adam and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, Figure Four Daily, The Brian and Vinny Show, and so much more. All of these members-only shows available at WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 a month. It's $9.99 a month if you sign up for a year or more. And for that price, you not only get all of the new shows, you get all of the classic shows as well. The full audio archive is available to you. Downloads, podcasts, the whole nine yards. Plus, you get full access to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Figure Four Weekly, and so much more. And I should note that on a lot of these members-only shows, we run contests. So far this month, we've given away 4 copies of WWE 2K15. All of these contests available only for subscribers, so head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Said it a million times, if you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So, Mike, tomorrow is Raw, and WWE last week did their conference call with all of the Raw ratings, the pay-per-view numbers, and so much more. What was your takeaway from the quarterly investors call that WWE did with Vince McMahon last week?
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to get into it heavy yet. I was probably most surprised because, you know, the little bit that I heard last night and talking to Dave about it, not much was really said by Vince McMahon, which is not a surprise. It's usually Barrios mostly who's doing the speaking in these things. But the thing that surprised me the most coming out of it was a couple days later, the stock price going up to about $16.25 is where I believe it closed on Friday, and that surprised me. And a lot of it has to do with these network numbers and them trumping up these network numbers and then saying how good they look. And there was another report that was issued about some of the numbers that WWE was talking about that put them in a bright, shiny light. I'm not saying we should feel bad for WWE's financials or anything like that. Far from it. They need to deal with tap out. Things are going well for the network. They have entered WrestleMania season. It's where they make a lot of do a lot of glad handing and moving and shaking and things like that when it comes to trying to get advertisers and put the company's best foot forward. It's certainly this time of year. And all of that's great. It is a lot of, though, just like every year, don't see what's behind this WrestleMania curtain. Don't look for the wizard here, because once you pull back after WrestleMania, we hit that malaise point that last year was worse than ever. So as impressive as these numbers are, as impressive as all of this is, I do question the numbers a little bit. I wonder if they are, you know, some of the new, you know, people that they have on. I'd like to just see how they're counting these numbers. I'd like to actually, for me, it's a little hard to believe. And as good as $1.25 million is, and as great as it is that the stock price is up, what will this mean after WrestleMania?
Well,
you know, and there's the bigger thing, because I'm not a stockholder, so I tend to not, it's not like I'm getting dividends out of this. You know, it's not like I care about it all that much. It's just, it's going to, this is the same as it is every year. There's this big rise. there's expectations, there's a lot of, you know, positive talk, you know, financially for WWE, and then we hit that creative and business malaise that takes place after WrestleMania every single year, and then it just, the cycle repeats itself. They are in a good position with the network. I'm glad about that, because I do like the concept of the network. I think there's a lot of programming issues with it. But with that said, how many of those people are going to be, you know, retained afterwards? That first quarter conference call that they have after WrestleMania to talk about how the year has started, and, you know, it's going to be good. You know, it's good every year because of all this stuff that goes on. It's what happens after WrestleMania that really matters. So as great as all this is, I'm just kind of taking a wait-and-see approach.
I'll tell you why I'm bullish on the numbers and why I'm not too surprised about that $16 stock price. I have a website, a subscription website, and I can track the ups and downs every single day. I know what our numbers do in January. I know what our numbers do in March. I know what our numbers do when we do a special, just like when WWE did their special. I can compare our retention rate to their retention rate after their special. It is remarkably similar. If they get up to 1.25 million buys, which I think they're going to have by the time Mania rolls around, I expect 1.25 million subscribers. If they get to 1.25 million at WrestleMania, the idea that after WrestleMania, they're going to lose 40% of their subscribers, to me is, I would almost go as far as to say, impossible. Obviously, they're going to see a drop. We see a drop every year as well. It's nowhere near 40%. And when you look at the special that they did in November, and you compare to the special that we did in November, the percentage drop that they had was almost identical to the percentage drop that we had after that cycle expired. So I would guess that if they can make it to 1.25 million, at the very most, they will lose 200,000, 250,000 subscribers, somewhere around there after WrestleMania. I don't imagine it going below 900,000 on average over the course of a year. And if you look at the numbers, if they can stay above 750,000 subscribers, they're fine. It would take a huge collapse for them to have a terrible year if they can stay above 750. I think they're going to be comfortably above 750. And not only that, their other big revenue source, which is the television deal, the way that this television deal with Universal is structured, it was not a consistent amount of money over 3 years. I can't remember the exact numbers, but you had a certain number, and then it grows substantially in year two, and then it grows substantially above that in year three. So the whole point of this is, if they could average 900,000 over the course of the year, which I think should be easy for them based on where they're at right now, and if you look at the Universal television numbers that are going to be growing next year and the year after, they are going to have two very, very lucrative years. It's not going to be like it's going to be their biggest years of all time. It might be, especially if the network numbers grow. But if they can stay at 900 and they see their numbers grow over the next 2 years, they're going to be better than fine. They're going to be doing very, very well. And to me, you would have to have a substantial collapse in many different areas of business for them to have 2 years of great pain. Last year was a very painful year for them. They killed their pay-per-view business, and they struggled to get the network growing. And still, at the end of the day, because of cost-cutting, they didn't do that bad. And if you look at a stable network number and then the television numbers over the next couple of years, they're fine.
Even if the network isn't all that stable with what they have, yeah, they are going to be fine. That doesn't mean that I'm that incredibly bullish on buying the stock price, though. You know, again, the network is great, but they haven't. One of the things they had to do because of what they convinced themselves they could do with that network was they had to scale it back a lot. And there's a lot on there that people want that's not there. And I know they have these numbers to say, well, people want the newer stuff. There's, you know, people are getting it for the pay-per-views, and that's it. But when it gets to the April, And from April to December, if there's no pay-per-view worth watching, there's no network worth watching. And that's the biggest problem is, again, creatively, and that affects everything else. If there's, obviously for WrestleMania, it is a no-brainer deal to spend $9.99 for the network. And I'm not trying to make fun of any of the numbers. Again, I want the network to succeed. But with that said, I mean, I'm very interested to see if this thing is going to continue to grow, because they debuted the thing worldwide, or they debuted it in the UK, they debuted it in Canada, they debuted it in other places. Exactly how much more are they going to continue to keep clawing out here and not lose? Again, especially with their history of people having no problem dropping this network.
Well, they have no problem dropping the network, but my theory is that now that they've gone to the month-to-month option, I think that they're 200,000 down, 200,000 up. I think that's going to end, because I think that you had a large number of people who didn't want to commit to 6 months, and so they grabbed themselves a prepaid card or a debit card or whatever, and they ordered the 6 months, and then they quit. And then when there was something else they wanted, they ordered another 6 months, and then they quit. I mean, obviously, a lot of people figured that out. I think that's why you had the big ups and downs. And maybe we'll have big ups and downs when you go month to month. I don't know. I agree that the network, I thought when they rolled it out, I was astonished at how little they had on there. I think that they've beefed it up quite a bit. There's still so much that they could put on there, particularly the Monday Night Wars television. I mean, every single Raw and Nitro should be on that network. And I hate to say it, every single Thunder should be on that network, and Saturday Night, and there's so many shows that should be on that network, but there is a lot on there. And as a fan, if I got sick of Raw, I'd go up there and I'd watch the old Nitros. I'd go up there and watch the old Raws. I'd watch NXT every week. There's no way, as a fan, I would ever cancel this network, because I love NXT. The Stone Cold podcast, granted, the Stone Cold podcast has already done Triple H and Vince McMahon. So you're going to have a huge drop-off from this point. I guess he could get Ric Flair on there and Stephanie McMahon and some of the bigger stars like John Cena. I don't even know how interesting that would be, because John Cena is such a robot. But there's still names, but the pickings are going to slim up here as we move forward. But I do think that there's enough stuff on there that I think that most fans, unless your finances are such that you really need this $9.99, I think most people are just going to keep it, because it's easier to keep it and go up there when there's something coming up, an NXT special, a podcast, some show, like they're doing a Booker T show. Maybe there's a bunch of Booker, I don't know. But the point is, I think that unless people are really hurting for money, I think the easiest course of action for a lot of fans is just, I'll keep the network. It's only $9.99, and you never know when there might be something up there I want to watch.
Look, I agree with you. I'm a big fan of that service. I'm a big fan of NJPW World. I'm just saying, you know, from July to the end of the year, you know, for as many people signed on, and it was about, what, 600,000 people, 500,000 people also dropped out.
It's true, but guess what? They're also heading towards 1.25 million. And I guess we'll see. The post-WrestleMania drop is going to be interesting, but I'm here to tell everybody that I really think it's going to be a lot less than a lot of people imagine. We're going to be back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And since I mentioned it in the last segment, Mike, who do you think would be good future guests for the Stone Cold podcast, which WWE said was two of their most watched shows ever on the network?
Shocking about that. Although it's still, how embarrassing for Vince McMahon in hindsight, at least as far as I'm concerned. I think logically Stephanie would make sense. I don't know if everybody would love that one, but Stephanie would make sense. John Cena, it was Steve Austin's podcast before, I thought he was fantastic. But that was also, it sounded like he was done in a locker room with nobody else around, or, you know, at least in comfortable circumstances. I don't know if we'd get the same John Cena, and I don't know if you'd want to put John Cena in that situation. But, you know, Daniel Bryan would probably be a really good one to go with, you know, because of all the things that go on. Cesaro, obviously, could be interesting and could be a way to get, you know, as far as WWE goes, as far as attention and things like that, just because they put Cesaro in a bad spot and letting him respond around WrestleMania season. When you're looking to sell him internationally again, when they remember they actually have to do that, I don't think that's a bad idea either. But I guess to me, Stephanie would probably make the most sense.
All right, everybody, we are going to head to the hourly break. But when we come back, we'll have more Wrestling Observer Live. And I want to mention, by the way, that if you would like to hear a Daniel Bryan interview or the former Claudio Castagnoli, Antonio Cesaro,
Paul Heyman.
A lot of these names have been interviewed on our website, and they're available in the archive right now. So head up there and do a search at WrestlingObserver.com. Give you something to do when the show is over. And as noted, back in a moment with more. We'll talk NXT. So much news to talk about. NXT, the Fastlane pay-per-view. We got to talk about that, as well as so much more. So stick around, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.